WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the show back on the road. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour was in Ocean City last week with lots of elected officials. You hear all that at Baltimore Positive this week, as well as finding it out in our podcast audio vault. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I was giving these away, and I had some lucky ones. I'm wearing my Coco shirt. We actually had a $100 winner at Coco. Coco's 2 months ago. The mayor wanted to go back to Coco's. We're going to be at Pappas on the 29th. We'll get back to Coco's in October. We're going to be at Fadley's in September as well. We are at Pappas in Glen Burnie on the 29th with Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman. We'll be chatting him up, and then at Fadley's on the 15th. With Dr. Jenkins from Coppin State, as well as a new basketball head coach, but former alum Larry Stewart. So that's at Fadley's on the 15th of September. Also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Buy one, get one free. Buy two, get two free. And get some windows, man. I got them a year ago. It was a great, great decision. Add value to my home. Certainly changed everything in regard to air conditioning and heating and value. So shout out to Window Nation. We appreciate them. I appreciate this guy. He's had some off-the-field hardships that have kept him away from being on the program as often as he once was. As I go through and celebrate 25 years, and Alan, I hope you like the cupcake logo here and the Disney sort of fireworks that we have here. Alan McCallum has been our baseball insider back in the days of watching Jeffrey Mayer. I tried to explain to your friend Mac down at the convention center that you and I were together with Scott Garceau in left field with Jeffrey Mayer. We clearly, our vantage point allowed us to see his arms extend out over the wall. We did not need a replay. We knew what had happened. But here we are all these years later, Alan, and you did a lot of jail time around here, you know, in regard to Oriole baseball and bad teams and you and I fighting about who sucks worse. This is a whole different thing, and it's been months since I've had you on. You, your family, hope you're doing well. Things down at the Kennedy Center rocking. But I get around town, and people bring you up to me, and they're like, what happened to that guy? And I'm like, he's watching baseball right now and as amazed as any of the rest of us that this team, and what a day for you to come on 30 games over 500. You're waiting for them to be 30 games over 500. I think you had some eating. Next time I do your show, the Orioles will have to be 30 games over 500. And I would say, well, Alan, you're never going to do the show again then, please. It was nice knowing you. It is amazing that this team is this team, right?
To be here at the end of August and to have a team, or near the end of August, and have a team 30 games over 500 is just spectacular. 14 losing seasons, a lot of tumult in between. We had that nice run with Buck and the boys, basically 12 through 16. And then, well, I was about to say some lean years, and we certainly had them, but if you had told me that it would be 3 years into the Elias era when they would start to be good, finish over 500, and then the next year they would absolutely dominate the American League and the American League East at that, I never would have believed it. But everything that was promised, everything that was advertised, Mike Elias and Sig Meidahl and their team have done. And I think I said to you a few weeks ago over text that this is the best young crop of Orioles players that I personally have ever seen come up, and something that looks like it could be sustainable for a long time. And we might not have even seen the best ones with Jackson Holliday, Heston Kerstad ticketed for Camden Yards in 2024, which is the time I think the true World Series window for them will open. This team could be a juggernaut for the next three, four years.
Whoa. They're the best team in the American League. They're the second best team in baseball. They're running away as we speak, and that can change. They got the Blue Jays in town. They got the bums from Colorado and the White Sox. I mean, these have-nots that they did a good job of taking care of Oakland despite Fuji's efforts in the middle game. But, like, they're going to win 100 games, right? Like, they're going to do something only a handful of teams have ever done here since 1954. Why do they get some sort of mulligan this year about not beating the Astros in the playoff? Like, there are no Yankees. There are no Red Sox. The boogeyman's not coming. Like, I this feeling that this is a 5-year thing. This is a 1-year thing at this point for me. They're here and now, and they're healthy. And That doesn't mean that they needed to go sign Verlander at the deadline or even spending any of John's precious money that they don't have. Poor Orioles, $200 million a year off their television contract for 18 years now. But for me, I expect them to do well in October. I expect to be really disappointed if they don't do well. And I, at this point, Alan, having you on right now, and I wouldn't have said this 4th of July, certainly not at the All-Star break, right? It's September next week. The Ravens are out of fake football beginning this weekend. It's September. They're in first place, and they're trending in the right direction. For me, like, I will be disappointed if they're playing baseball on October 3rd, 4th, or 5th. I think at this point, this whole, like, wrapping up a bye, wrapping up the division, finishing that, that would go a long way to thinking they can win the World Series. You know what? Let me believe they won't win the World Series if they collapse here the next 6 weeks and finish five games out and have to go play baseball that week, right? Like, the bye thing, that changes my mind about a lot of this because it eliminates one of the major hurdles, which is game one, first game of the playoffs, and you're down 0-1 and you're looking up. I think it's different in the second round. I really do.
Sure. I agree with you. So let's break it down. Why do I say that they are unlikely to win the World Series this year? They're three games up on the Rays. Can they win the division? Absolutely. Could the Rays come back and take it from them, which means they'd have to be a wild card? Yes, that is also a possibility. That's not the problem. The problem is a matter of math and innings. That Kramer, Bradish, who has been nothing short of spectacular.
Gibson hasn't been good lately, right? I mean, Flaherty hasn't been good at all, really.
But the young guys that are the future for this team have already exceeded their innings limits. And Tyler Wells is the ultimate example of that. This guy you looked at all of his numbers and they were the best in the American League. And he's in the minor leagues right now trying to reset because innings are a real thing. Now, in previous iterations of baseball, you pushed guys. But in this version of Major League Baseball, teams are very afraid to push their pitchers. And it creates situations where when they hit their innings limits, it becomes a really dramatic issue. So, yes, the six-man rotation.
It wasn't for Billy Martin in Oakland.
It wouldn't have been for Johnny Oates in Baltimore. Yes, the six-man rotation helps. Yes, the off days that they're going to have as they go through September will help. If they win the division, having a bye will help. I'm not telling you it's impossible for them to win the World Series, but the fact that the guys going in will already be 6 weeks past their innings limits and will have to push for another month, that's real. That's a lot. And my concern would be if they do get farther into the playoffs, if they win the World Series, great, whatever, nobody cares. But to push that far, I feel like this season is the season where you get them to the point where they know what it's like to get through a full season. And then in 2024, they take that next step into October to go deep. Add to that.
I love the idea of being disappointed by losing the American League Championship Series with this group, but I don't necessarily feel, and it'll all be about how they look, how they're trending, how they're pitching, how their arms feel, how the bats are doing, who's healthy, who's not, right? Ask the Ravens about Marlon Humphrey, right? Like, last week they're happy, this week they're not so happy, right? And I think we were happy before Markakis took the pitch on the wrist. I mean, I'm still convinced in 12 they would have been better, right? So, but D.L. Hall coming back, John Means coming back right now, Grayson Rodriguez looking like something right now, and we're 6 weeks out on a playoff game, I'm starting to buy more of what they're selling, Alan. I really am.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry. You froze for a minute there. I think I know where you were going. What I would also add to this is that you look at the bullpen. Bautista's been spectacular, nothing short of spectacular, but everyone, including Cano, past him, has had moments of question. Cino Perez looks like he's finding himself towards the end of the season. Cano is trying to figure it out again after being legendary for the first 6 weeks. But Bauman, you mentioned Fuji.
Webb's gotten some looks, right?
Webb's looked good. Coulomb, who helped carry the bullpen until he got hurt. You hope he can come back strong. There are a lot of questions in the bullpen that are going to make it tough to get through it. But so much of this is about the pitching, ultimately, and guys having to find their way through the next 5 weeks till they get to the postseason. It just feels like it's a stretch to expect this team of young guys and where they've been to get into November and carry the team. Is it impossible? Of course it isn't. And John, if they can get back John Means, if Kyle Gibson can find the Fountain of April in October, if Jack Flaherty can call on the ghosts of 3 or 4 years ago, guys get hot in October, November. That's certainly not impossible. But they're going to have to figure out a way to piece it together, which in a way that feels a little harder than it feels harder to expect that to happen than to say, this is a year they've put the American League on notice and next year they're going to go for broke.
They've had a lot of things go wrong. I mean, Bradish took the line drive right away. Mullins gets hurt. Mountcastle had vertigo. Like, Gunnar Henderson. This was a kid. This could have gone either way, right? It did go either way for Grayson Rodriguez. A lot of things went wrong for him. The fact that D.L. Hall hasn't pitched is kind of wrong for them.
They was horrible for the first 6 weeks.
But the Ryan O'Hearns and the McCanns and the Aaron Hicks. I mean, just these other contributors, let alone Mateo and Frazier and guys sort of around the edge of the roster of what we now consider to be this superstar center of the team of Rutschman and Henderson, right? And probably not far off with Mountcastle and Mullins that you feel their impact. And we mentioned Santander, right?
That's what's so spectacular about what's happened this season. You look at where they are, and usually someone is having an MVP season. Someone is having a, wow, I've never seen them do this before, or they're having their best year. I guess maybe you could argue that Gunnar Henderson in the last 2 months is having that kind of impact. But this isn't Santander's best year. It's not Mountcastle's. Mountcastle's been on an amazing tear. Everybody's just contributing, and the whole feels, I don't want to say bigger than the sum of the parts, but the team just clicks in ways. When one thing falls apart, something else picks up the slack. That the dynamics of that as a team, it's really special. It really is.
And hard to measure. You measure it by their 30 games over 500. That is the measurement, right? Literally.
Now, you talk about the collapse of the Yankees and the Blue Jays not getting everything they can out of themselves, and the Tampa Bay Rays and the amount of pitching injuries they've had. And we won't even talk about Wander Franco right now. All the things that have happened to the Rays, those things have contributed to where the Orioles are. And can you expect those things to happen in 24, 25? No, you can't. But as I said, the odds are very good that the Orioles are just scratching the surface of how good this team can be. I'm not saying take for granted where you are this year and not try to win, but I'm saying I think reasonable expectations for what could happen in the next 6 weeks in terms of how the wear and tear on this pitching staff will impact them going forward is a real thing to consider.
Alan McCallum has been our baseball insider these many years, since the mid to early 90s. We've been at this long, long, long time. A lot of hours, a lot of days of our lives, gray hairs and all of that stuff, going back to Robbie Alomar hitting home runs in Cleveland, we're together, and the Jeffrey Mayer incident, let alone 12, 14, and 16 around here, which still feels like a pretty friggin' long time ago. Alan, the Mike Elias decision, and listen, I'm not going to run you ragging on John Angelos or the stadium or them moving to Nashville or any of the other stadium lease stuff. I'm just going to stay on the field with you. We could tackle that in the offseason or whenever the time is right on all that. But there is a part of this where, and you read my FU to John Angelos, which is richly deserved, some of my finest work. I would say that the decision making around the franchise in regard to signing Rutschman, value, the way they tiptoed around the deadline, the way he's crying poor in the New York Times, like all of that that goes into it. The one thing that can be said is he brought Mike Elias in here, at least so far. And as I've said, Elias hasn't had to go down the hallway and ask for money. Right. I mean, Elias went in and said, we're going to save you money. We're going to work cheap. We're going to build up the farm. We're going to invest in the Caribbean, like all of those things, which are 5 cents on a dollar in the beginning until it bears fruit and you have to pay Adley Rutschman. You have to pay. You already got Heston Kerstad and Holiday going to the Hall of Fame. They're going to need to get paid too. So like all of these guys need to get paid, and Kansas City couldn't figure it out. Right. I mean, that thing's an issue. It's destroyed again. Him talking about the stadium and the money and the gambling and the Battery and Atlanta, and I'll hear all of that. I'll even hear the Yankees and Red Sox that it's not fair. The whole system isn't fair. Like we all buy into that, but that's all the more reason to win here and now, because the boogeyman's not coming to get you. But the other part of this is, how do you explain Mike Elias to people? Like, for years and years, and again, if Mike Flanagan could be resurrected and sit here, he'd say, the old man never let me pick the best players. So we were always picking the 25th best player because he didn't want to pay anybody in the top 10. At that time, a measly $1.5 million, but he was happy to give Chris Davis $200 million. Like, so that's why we didn't get tons of great players, because even when we sucked, slot, above slot, all of that stuff. But Elias has gone in and taken the best baseball players and then somehow fished out the other side to get these guys to the big leagues. And he can look at a player and figure out whether the guy's going to be able to make it or not. And that's an uncanny gift. That's something every sports franchise would love to be able to do, is to pick the good apples.
Well, and let's look at it, right? This didn't just start happening in Baltimore. He has a track record. It happened in St. Louis. It happened in Houston. And his team has come to Baltimore and they've done very much the same thing. We were John Angelos. I don't know the man, and I don't know how smart.
By the way, had a press pass all those years. Did you ever come in contact with him?
A few times.
I never did. Not to have a
conversation, but a here and there, yeah. Okay. Whatever he is or isn't, I think at least for a moment in time, he was smart enough to realize that all the things his father did prior to him taking over didn't really work. Maybe Buck, maybe you want to talk about Dan Duquette. They had a nice little run, but for sustainability, it didn't really work. And finding Elias, Sigma et al., guys who had a track record, but not to do it on their own, to bring them in was a stroke of genius. Will that sustain? I don't know. So yes, Elias seems to be a brilliant finder of talent. Now, you're talking about keeping players and the $200 million player. Look, you talked about Kansas City. I'll also throw in the Chicago Cubs. Not only did they not keep those young guys from those amazing runs, you look at the track record. Those guys went other places and didn't succeed. Those guys fell apart. Look at the guys that left Kansas City. And most of their careers went south pretty quickly after signing big contracts.
Nobody in that Kansas City team is going to the Hall of Fame, right?
Like, Salvador Perez may be the only one. He's right. The one they kept. You look at the Chicago Cubs and the team they won with in 16, and with the exception of maybe Anthony Rizzo, who's having his worst year right now, Javier Baez, Chris Bryant, you look at all the big stars, those guys have gone away and done nothing. So there's something to be said about how much longer past those initial 6 or 7 years do you want to keep these guys and commit to them long-term? Am I saying it's going to happen with Gunnar Henderson and Natalie Rutschman and Jackson Holliday and Hester Kerstad? I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying baseball in the 21st century values the young guy. And is it better to be the New York Yankees and sign all the big talent for crazy money? Or is it better to be the Tampa Bay Rays, where you get the most out of guys that you can, and then you jettison them and keep bringing guys up? I think part of
Well, the Washington Nationals are a great example of that, right? Like, they just said no thank you to all the big money, and they're retooling it. And 4 years from now, they hope to be the Orioles again, right? Literally.
I think, and I don't know Mike Elias to say this for sure, but it is it's hard to imagine he would come to Baltimore and think that he's going to get $1 billion 5 years from now to sign 4 or 5 key players. I mean, I can't imagine that he actually believes that. So if you're coming to Baltimore and you're Mike Elias, you have to believe, I'm going to build up this farm system and I'm going to build a pipeline so that we can be much more like the Tampa Bay Rays than the Los Angeles Dodgers or the New York Yankees, so that when the time comes, we make smart trades or we let guys go and we get the compensation pick and we bring up the next guy from our pipeline. And that's how we sustain any kind of success. So whether John Angelos turns out to be the Messiah of Baltimore, which I think is extremely unlikely, or just another carpetbagger who's looking to milk the organization for all they're worth, Mike Elias, it would seem to me, seems to be a man who understands that the only way to continue long-term success in Baltimore is to build and manage his team much more like the Tampa Bay Rays. And I've said this to you before. That means that Baltimore Orioles fans are going to be disappointed because they can't latch on to guys like they did with Frank and Brooks and Eddie and Cal and Jim Palmer. It means you have to be in love with the next man up as Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson go out the door 5 years from now.
Well, we experienced that with Messina. I mean, dude, you were talking about the greatest Orioles classes of all time. I'm a little older than you, right? So I'm 55 right this year. I remember 73, 4, 5, 6, that range.
Right.
And Weaver and the Oriole way was every year we're going to get a new player. Every year we're going to bring Gritch up this year, Belanger, then Gritch, then Bumbrey, then Coggins, then Baylor. That, you know, that's how all, and I just gave you a name of a pipeline. Rich Dower won the Triple Crown in the International League, and Gritch and Belanger were in his way. They had to let Bobby Gritch go and make a lot of money in California to make room for Rich Dower, right? And then this Ripken kid came along after. Like, so all of it was all cyclical from a strategic. There was an Oriole way, but part of that was they had a wealth of young talent. The last time was 50 years ago when you're talking about Baylor, Gritch, Coggins, like guys that made a lot of money that had all-star numbers. And even Davey Johnson, right? Like the fact that he was here and gone during that era and hitting 40 home runs in Atlanta, that happened because Gritch was ready to go. It was like next guy up. And it wasn't about millions of dollars. It was about you're 28, you're 22. Come on in, kid.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we want the younger guy. Now it's cheaper guy. I would say this, Alan, if I owned the team, I'd have a lot of the similar problems John Angelos would have about Baltimore, the market, baseball, fixed income, all of that nonsense. Now I'd be I'd be the toast of the town in Baltimore, right? Like he's trying to move the team, screwing around, offending people he doesn't need to offend, core customers. All, you know, if you're really not moving, like get your best deal with the government, but don't be a jerk. And don't be a jerk to Dan. He doesn't know how not to be a jerk. It's pretty obvious. We've watched his act with Dan Connolly.
You can't say open the books twice and then never bother to do it and then wonder why people think you're a liar.
And then say to the New York Times, if we open the books, and the New York Times guy says, well, didn't you promise to open the books? That's why I'm here. Because I'm a reporter and you promised. There is a point with Rutschman and Henderson, specifically right here and now, at 30 games over 500, where they are, to say, all right, let's get a couple hundred million out the door to keep them around for a year or two or three. At, you know, like whatever we need to do to get them wealthy enough that they stay here 2, 3, 4 years past there, buy them till they're 28, 30, whatever we need to do, that if you believe in it, today's the day to do that. Today,
absolutely.
Not tomorrow, not after the parade in October that you don't think's coming, that I'm more bullish than you. And that's kind of an interesting thought, that if you had a dollar and I had a dollar, I'd be more willing to bet a dollar on them winning the World Series this year, because I see this as they don't know any better. I've watched this before. I watched this with the Ravens players in 2001 when they won. And I watched it in 2013 with the Ravens players after they got their ass kicked 4 times and Flacco's throwing interceptions, throwing touchdown passes, and they're dropping it. I saw this with the 83 Orioles after 79 and 80 and 81 and 82, and they were just as good, if not better, and they won in 83. And then Ripken never won again, right? So, and Ray Lewis had to wait to the last day of his career to win again, right? So I don't – but the lease, the mojo, Rutschman, Henderson, long-term, all of that, you know, that's have a little faith, believe a little bit in what you're doing. And if they don't, they're going to get very quickly into this Manny Machado land of, I don't like it here. You're a jerk. And I'm not spending the rest of my, I'll go to play for a real franchise that wants to win, not one that's going to the New York Times pussyfooting around and bad mouthing me before I even get the money. Like, well, literally.
You, first off, you're absolutely right. This team could be too young and too naive not to understand that they shouldn't win this year. That is entirely possible. And no one would love to see that more than me. So let's keep that on the table as a possibility. But you're also right in the sense that if there's any time to try to get these guys to sign long-term, today's the day. No question about it. Gunnar Henderson, you're going up to right now and saying, we want to keep you here for 10 years, $250, $300 million. Let's do it. That said, the Tampa Bay Rays did that with Wander Franco, and they're thinking about it right now, right? For other reasons, and I'm not implying that anybody else is.
And we'll see how the Lamar Jackson thing goes too, because when this money comes,
right,
you're a different guy. And that was for, yeah, Aaron Judge in New York, and for for anybody that gets that money, it's a different gig for you, right? Now, the guy in New York found that out when he stopped playing in Miami in front of nobody, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems that Elias has gone and found players with good heads on their shoulders who are not just about the money. We'll see. Money does.
They're
change.
All going to be about the money at some point, right?
But I will say this. I mean, when they drafted Adley, or before they drafted Adley, when they were talking about it, I said I wouldn't draft a catcher number one. And so much of that was not about whether knowing Adley was going to be a good player or not. He certainly has been that. But catching wears you out. It destroys the body. And while they've been giving him breaks, DHing him a lot more in the last month, you look at the way they used him for the first 4 months of the season, and it seemed like he might break down by October. So it's hard to look 6 years down and say, you know, what he's going to be as a catcher at that point. So maybe you're a little more hesitant about that, but he's the face of the franchise at this point, and you've locked yourself into trying to sign him. You identify two or three guys. You try to get them early. Whether or not they sign is going to be up to them. But if you give them a legitimate offer, then you at least can say, hey, we tried to get this done. The Atlanta Braves have locked up a lot of their young talent, and the industry has talked about it for a long time, about whether or not players would follow other players in other places would follow that model because they lose out on a lot of money. I don't know what's going to happen, Nestor. If, again, the smart thing would be to identify the two or three guys that you want to build around, who you believe can help you long term, and you go after them at this moment. But this is this has been a magical stretch for the Baltimore Orioles, 30 games over 500. It's hard to look at it and say that at least the people running the front office, not talking about ownership, not talking about the future with ownership, but I'm talking about the people that run the front office. It's hard to look at them and say they've done a bad job in any sense. In terms of the trade deadline and what Elias did or did not do, again, it seems to me that what he looks at and says, next year when we have the full team that I want together here, that's when you can start moving guys off. Because eventually they have guys that have been in the farm system that are ready to play somewhere else. They're going to have to move them, and there's not going to be room for them, as you're talking about, at the major league level. And that's when you go and make deals. And you don't have the desperation and urgency of the trade deadline where teams try to fleece you for what you have to move them and build upon. Yes, you get to the next trade deadline, you'll need to make a move or two, and you make the decision to do it. But I think he wants to get all the pieces that he's put on the table here, and then make those moves and then get to a point in the next years where you start to rebuild your farm system again to get the next guys up.
Alan McCallum has been our baseball insider for 3 decades. We've been doing this for 25 years. Alan, I knew you'd like the 25th anniversary. I was trying to drag you out, get a crab cake. No cheese for you. I know you're not going to eat cheese. By the way, why aren't you from Philly? They do that pizza bread up there without the cheese, and it's like on every menu. And I'm like, that ain't pizza, but that's Alan McCallum pizza. Pizza bread.
I'm not from Philly because I was born in Baltimore, and I expect to live in Baltimore my entire life.
You're better for it. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Is there anything you want to say about DeAngelo's integrity? I mean, you followed this as long as anyone. I'm hoping that you read my Dear John piece. But the New York Times thing's out now, and it's really hard to have any confidence in what – and again, I gave him all the praise and love on the Elias thing and whatever. But now big boy decisions need to be made about television deals, business, the lease, the future of the city. And to your point, like, he's a bit of a liar, so I call him one.
So in the John Angelos running the team era, you've had the family lawsuit. You've had the situation yelling at a reporter for absolutely no reason, saying you're going to open the books and not doing it. You've got a lease deal that everyone promised would be done by the All-Star break that still sits here. And the Kevin Brown situation falls into this category. And now what he's saying in the New York Times at a moment when the Orioles fans should be celebrating. Every time you get to a point where you feel like you can feel good about the team, they step on their own feet and crash hard on the ground. What do I want to say about John Angelos? Get it together. Figure it out. If you don't want to figure it out, find a local owner and sell the team. I always say when I see people say that, though, be careful what you wish for, because maybe he takes the team to Nashville. Nobody thinks it's viable. Nobody thinks that can happen, but stranger things have happened.
Well, I think he was watching Oakland over the weekend, and if Oakland can move, he can move. And then it's a matter of whether Nashville would take him and how many lawyers he'd have to lawyer up to go beat baseball up. But this speaks to Art being at the end of his life and his sons needing to move that team to keep him solvent. And I get more and more concerned every day that they've pissed all this money away. I really do. You know what I mean? Like that there is no money there other than the there that's there upon sale. Because I lived through that with Art. I mean, and Steve Bisciotti, if he were sitting here being honest, he'd say that's how he scored the team. He scored the team because they needed cash. He had it. They made it happen. He made them whole, kicked them out, got rid of them. And they, you know, at the end of the day, they never wanted to sell the team. They never wanted to move to Baltimore. It was a survival technique for them. Unlike Stan Kroenke, who's just trying to get rich. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a different thing. The Ravens moved here out of family desperation in retrospect and in reality then. Art was broke. Nobody knew that. Art wasn't saying that, but Art was broke.
This is going to feel like a segue. I'm watching this show with my sister called The Gilded Age. It's about New York in the 1860s and all the super rich, the Vanderbilts and all those people. And the show is essentially about status, old money versus new money, and that those who have want more. They always want more. And when they're afraid they're going to, and in the pursuit of more, they often risk losing everything, and they would rather be dead than have nothing. And I say that to say that when you have a ton of money and you are kings in your court and you feel it going away, or you feel the situation maybe for the first time in your life where all of the trappings and pieces of life that you enjoy, that you've always experienced, feel like they might be gone tomorrow. You do crazy things to make sure you have money, to make sure you have more, and to make sure you maintain your royal status. Is that where John Angelos is? Is that where the Angelos family reside right now? I would say the lawsuit expresses some of that for me in terms of concern. I would say the fact that they still haven't signed this lease is certainly creates room for concern. And just the reality, look, whatever people want to think about the Masson deal and DC, the Nationals coming to Washington, DC completely changed the landscape of the media market that the Orioles existed in. When the Angelos family bought the Baltimore Orioles, they had inroads into not just Washington, D.C., but Northern Virginia, where the money exists. And you wanted baseball, people came here, and that's not something they have to do anymore. And Masson, the need for Masson is tenfold given those circumstances. And if they can't find a way to make that work, if they can't find to make a way to make Baltimore profitable for them, then it really does come down to either selling the team, having less than what you have, or doing something which feels calamitous, like moving the team out. I don't know what they're going to do, but there's a real reality in this that nobody ever talks about, that the media market that they exist in right now is dramatically different from the one they entered when they bought.
It's so amazing that they can castrate their talent on the air and have WBAL, WMAR, and WBFF not even report it, because, you know, Greg Bader sends a nasty note. By the way, did you see what Buck Showalter's wife wrote about me 2 weeks ago?
I did. Yeah. I did.
I'm a bad guy, Alan. Greg Bader and John Angelos think I'm a bad guy. I don't know how you associate with me all these years. Alan McCallum is here. He is our longtime Orioles insider. John Angelos has opened his mouth again for the New York Times, but the team's 30 games over 500, and Al and I may be at some point eating popcorn. You can have some apple juice. I'll drink some beer. No cheese. And we'll watch playoff baseball together. Wouldn't that be nice, you and me watching a playoff game together? Like, we
should. Let me tell you something, Nestor. If the Baltimore Orioles win the World Series in 2023, I will pop a bottle of champagne with you, and you can watch me drink half of it before your very eyes.
Have I ever seen you imbibe alcohol?
No.
All right.
Not once.
Well, it's going to give you a little headache. I would stay off the champagne. I'll work you a little premium tequila or something that's going to be a little better for your head. Something that's, you know, a little less sugar. Alan McCallum is my dude. He is on the trail down at the Kennedy Center and welcoming great music in. And, you know, hopefully seeing Sting in a couple of weeks and all the things that you love, as well as once in your adulthood, a World Series parade for the Orioles. You've suffered enough, Alan.
When I did the show on NST, the opening song was 1983 by John Mayer, and it was purposeful. And the sad thing is that it's still appropriate, and I'm ready for that song to no longer be timely. I want the Orioles to win a world championship. It's been a long time coming.
You know, Mayer would be playing in the middle of the World Series here at the CFG Bank Arena if they're in the World Series. So we'll get that request out to John Mayer. All right.
Excellent.
All right, Alan McCallum, you love him. He is. You can also find his favorite thing at the Owings Mills. You want to give him the Owings Mills a transit stop station story real quick? Because I want you to promote that. It's important.
There is a Negro League Baseball Museum in Baltimore. It is housed at the Owings Mills Library, and I think everybody should go check it out because it is absolutely spectacular. The history and the roots of the Negro League that exist in this town that so many people don't know about. The storytelling begins there, and everyone should go check it out for sure.
There it is. All right, Alan McCallum, a little public service announcement for those of you traveling public transit. And by the way, Wes Moore, Ben Cardin, Chris Van Hollen, Brandon Scott, all discussing the Red Line as well, coming your way from Ocean City and our Mako experiences down there. We're going to be back at Pappas on Tuesday the 29th. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Win Donation. And then on the 15th, we are at Fadley's in the morning, kicking the year off right. I'm going to be eating some good crab cakes around here. I'm Nestor. He's Alan. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. World Series or bust. We're Baltimore positive. Stay with us.